I'm Adelina Malcomal-Ferreira from PSSRU, and I just noticed, and it's really handy, that there's an introduction to the project that I was about to present in the same page as this session of the program. The only thing is that this was a bit futuristic because the web page is not quite live yet, but it will be soon. And if any of you would like to follow up, have any sort of updates on when it all comes live, please, maybe we can exchange cards or something. I can email you when it's all live. So I'm presenting MODEM, and then Rafael will talk about some work that's kind of been under the umbrella of MODEM, but also related to the G7 event. And he'll also talk a bit about methodological challenge and the kind of modeling we're going to do. So MODEM is a project funded by the ESRC and IHR, which are the research councils in Britain, in the context of a big investment in dementia care called Improving Dementia Care. The title of the project is, and it's very ambitious, it's a comprehensive approach to modeling outcome and cost impacts of interventions for dementia. The ambition is, we're not short of it. It's a big team comprising people from many universities, and we are working. We have demographers, we have epidemiologists, we have clinical psychiatrists, we have carers who are members of staff in the project. And so we have a very wide and diverse team, lots of economists, of course, and sociologists as well. And hopefully between us we'll get a good understanding of what we're talking about. So what we know, and thank you, Yuki, for a fantastic introduction, is that in future we know that we will need to spend more in dementia. That's one of the few things we know for sure about the future. These are some examples of work. So even, you know, we're looking here at only 8 years away, but we're already looking at quite a substantial increase in public long-term care expenditure. And we know that almost half of this expenditure is associated to the care of people with dementia. And globally, also, we are aware that this is a big phenomenon, and hopefully the work we're doing here will also might be helpful in other places. So we know that WHO has projected that the cost of dementia will double in 20 years. This is an area which has lots of uncertainty, lots of things can happen. But basically, the key factors is that life expectancy, how long people live, prevalence of dementia, type and quality of care, will all affect future funding requirements, and our work will look into that in the data. Our research questions are, first of all, how many people with dementia will there be between now and 2040? What will be the costs and the outcomes of their treatment, care, and support under present arrangements? The costs are actually not so, well, you know, they're difficult and there's lots of uncertainties and assumptions you need to make. But the outcomes are the really difficult thing to estimate, especially when you try to aggregate things. And we are in a big, big learning curve here. And we want to understand how the costs and outcomes vary with the characteristics and circumstances of people with dementia and their carers. And crucially in this project, we'd like to understand what would happen if evidence-based interventions, the things that have shown to be cost-effective and to work, were widely available and accessed. And we're doing that at England level. So what we'll be doing is we'll be taking examples of cost-effective interventions and just extending them. So the interventions we're looking at are quite wide-ranging, and here it's crucial that we're working with epidemiologists because we're looking at prevention, and then interventions like lifestyle, changing lifestyle, nutrition, exercise. We are looking also at treatments, medications, cognitive stimulation, other therapies, and we're looking at care and support arrangements. And we're looking at the evidence in all these areas to see if we can understand the resource impacts, quality and life impacts, and carer outcomes. And we'll be trying to model all that. And we have 3.5 years from now to do that. So here are some examples of interventions. I'm not going to go into that. I think actually Martin already explained this yesterday, so I'll skip through. The methods are, first of all, we are working very closely with people with dementia and their carers. We have, as I said, the carer in the team. And we want to have an understanding of what things mean to them and what is acceptable, what isn't, and how, you know, when you look at the clinical paper, understand what the situation is like when you're actually using some of those services, perhaps. As I said, we'll project the numbers of people with dementia, we'll project family and other support available to them, costs of services and unpaid support, and we'll also try and understand the evidence of effective and cost-effective interventions. So we're doing a major literature review, including ongoing studies where possible. We're collecting data, and I think one interesting thing here, because there's such a paucity of data in this area, is that we are using data from baseline of clinical trials in dementia, which is adding a very rich source of data to us. And because it's the baseline, interventions haven't happened, so we're able to get a better picture of dementia. Now, one interesting bit is that when you're using combining population survey data with clinical trial data, and some of the interventions come from clinical trials, we don't often use the same measures. So we have, we're collecting information for 300 people, have a little cohort we're surveying and we're following in two waves, and we'll be able to look at crosswalking between the different measures that we need to use. And I think that would be quite an interesting methodological source. And finally, we're going to simulate the wider rollout of all these evidence-based interventions on and the impacts on outcomes, costs, and patterns of expenditure. We have three key types of models that we're using. So there is a dynamic microsimulation projection model of the disabling consequences of dementia that's being done at Newcastle University. And that feeds into both care pathways model that will be, in fact, this should be models because there'll be more than one. Different interventions come with different types of cost effectiveness information and measures and modeling. So we will adapt the models to each of the interventions. And then from the outcomes of both of these, we will plug everything into this macro simulation projection model, which is something we've developed over the years. Rafael has been leading that and I've worked closely with him now for a long time. And he'll explain a bit more about that later. But essentially, that helps us give a national picture of all that's happening in the other models. So what goes into the model? Well, everything that you can think of. This is an existing model. We're using the large-scale data sets available in Britain, in England. Crucially, we're using CFAS-2, which is a very rich data set for people with dementia. It's called the Cognitive Functioning Study of Aging, and they've recently published some estimates on prevalence of dementia, and that is, it also has information using services. We're doing a literature review. We're using information from completed and ongoing trials. We are also, there's a whole strand of work analyzing data on dementia and social participation and isolation that's led by Anne Bowling and Andy Grundy. We're doing this crosswalking study, which sounds a bit nerdy, but we think it's fascinating, of looking at different measures of outcomes, different ways of identifying need. The 300 people of people with dementia and caregivers, that's led by Shruti Banerjee. We will then conduct focus groups with people with dementia and their caregivers to try and understand what it all means to them and what they, how they think we should interpret things too. And we're also working closely with our advisory group, user and care reference groups. I have to say that everybody has been really helpful from the Alzheimer's Society to CARES UK, ADAS, we've had great support already from them. I won't go into detail into the modeling, but the slides will be available, and I'm happy to email them as well. So this is just a quick, I'll just show them. So we have this micro-simulation model, this care pathways model, which we're still thinking about, the micro-simulation model, which is now quite well established, and we will be looking in great detail at all the sources of variability and looking very closely at sensitivity of our estimates in view of different assumptions. Finally, we want to develop a publicly available, we call it a legacy tool, which will be a model that will be on a legacy web page that can be used at local level so that commissioners and people, anyone, can make their own projections of needs in the area or their area of interest and look at the impacts in terms of needs for care and support, outcomes and costs, provided we've done a good job with everything else. And I'll pass now to Rafael, who will tell you a bit more about more specifics.
So, no sooner did we start the modem project, which Adelina has been describing, then we were asked very rapidly to almost sort of divert our attention to two other projects. One of them was a study commissioned by the Alzheimer's Society, which is a traditional cost of illness study of dementia in the UK. They're going to publish the results next week, so I can't go into that a lot. I'm talking about the other one. The other one was a study commissioned by the Department of Health. We had only 3 months to do it, so it was a very rapid piece of work, and its objective was for publication with the G7 Legacy event. That was the one held here in London in June, and it's one of that series of four Legacy events. So, what the Department of Health asked us to do was to look at the expenditure and outcomes of dementia care as it is in the UK today, and to compare it with four different scenarios which the Department of Health were interested in, and ministers actually were personally interested in, I believe. Martin briefly outlined those yesterday, and I'll just come back to those. So to acknowledge, we have the wide research team of colleagues here at LSE, and to thank a large number of experts who provided a lot of help at very short notice. These are the five scenarios which Martin mentioned. A is simply the current pattern of care as it is in England, really, today, but our study relates to the UK. The second one the department was interested in is what would happen if nobody was diagnosed, there were no diagnosis carried out, and nobody got any care. The third one is there would be diagnosis, and in principle we asked to look at a scenario where everybody with onset was diagnosed. As you know, actually, only about half the people are diagnosed, but there was no follow-up care. The fourth one was the best evidence-based care along the lines of NICE guidelines, if everybody was both diagnosed and received the what's believed to be a best evidence-based care. And the final one was some hypothetical scenarios, supposing that dropped out of the ether tomorrow a pharmaceutical product that could delay either the onset of dementia or delay the condition so that the severe stage was postponed. That's what we were asked to look at. Our methods were, as you'd expect, a very quick look at the literature insofar as time permitted to get at some information for some key parameters that we needed for our modelling. We also consulted experts, as I have already mentioned. We developed two models, both of which are based, as Adelina indicated, on models that we've worked on here at the LSE over quite some years now, actually. But to home in on dementia care particularly, on the particular issues we're asked to look at here, which is the costs, but also we did look at the outcomes in terms of QALYs, using the Euroqual 5D instrument. And Adelina's mentioned, we looked at data from a number of trials in which colleagues here at LSE have been involved over the years. These trials between them had 1,400 users of services with dementia in them, and we've extracted from them data on the patterns of care that this group received, on the costs, or we attached costs really, to the patterns of care, and this was both formal and unpaid or informal care. And also for those studies that had this data, the Euroqual health state at baseline of these 1,400 people. This was a challenging piece of work because the studies covered different groups, some of them concentrated in the community, some on care homes, some on milder dementia, some on severe dementia. So I think when a little bit of caution has to be taken when interpreting these results. So from each study, we took what we could. That subgroup that it covered, on them we took the costs and the Euroqual. So our modelling then, clearly we needed data on the prevalence of dementia, and that we took from the Dementia UK 2007 study led by Professor Martin Knapp, and also the severity data from that same source. We divided the people with dementia in the UK, 800,000 of them, having divided them by age, gender, and severity, next division between care home and the community, and for that we relied on data from the CFAS-1 study, quite an old study, which is now being replaced by the results coming out from CFAS-2, and in that 70% of older care home residents have dementia in that piece of work. For those in the community, we divided them into those receiving only unpaid care, those receiving only formal services, those receiving both, and those receiving neither. And because quite a lot of these trials only included people who had an unpaid carer, to look at those receiving formal care only proved a little bit challenging. Cost and quality data, then, as I explained, came from the trials, and where the trials reported volumes of care, we attached unit costs from the, mainly from the PSSA unit cost volume. And then we aggregate the costs and the qualities, and we compare the scenarios. So this shows the costs per capita per year at 2012 prices, relying particularly on the results from those trials. Costs get very high, and what you can see, for example, is that green is healthcare, NHS healthcare, purple is social care, both publicly and privately funded, and the sort of orangey colour at the top is unpaid care. And you can see, for example, for those with moderate, well, actually for any of those in the community, the unpaid care really dominates. And we've costed unpaid care at the national minimum wage, which is, of course, far less than the replacement cost. And that's, of course, it's one of the issues, and Courtney referred to that in her presentation earlier. Contrast that then with residential care, as you'd expect, the unpaid cost is small and the formal care costs are much higher than in the community. So that's cost per capita. This is now the annual costs for the UK, pounds million, 2012 prices. Again, the segments of the bars are the same as before. Green health, purple social care, yellowish is the unpaid care. The left-hand column is the state of play as of today, the expenditure of about 21 billion on 800,000, I just have said older people with dementia in the UK. And the four other columns represent what we believe the costs would be if a series of different interventions that are under study by these various trials were actually available to everyone for whom they would be suitable as of today. And you can see that the difference in costs is not very great, nor is actually, I'm going to hear the difference in qualities all that great either. And the variety of reasons for this, methodological reasons, quite apart from actual effectiveness reasons, and partly we've not been able to look at issues around the targeting here. We've also were not able in the time available to look what would happen if one and the same person received all four of these added up, because that involves information which we don't have from the evidence about not so much about the cost but what the quality results would be of receiving a combination. So this is what we found on these four interventions. We then looked, and perhaps in some ways this may be more interesting, at what would happen if we had suddenly appeared like magic, an intervention that could do one of two things, or do both potentially. Either slow down the progression so the onset is unchanged, but the period with mild dementia is 10% longer, and the period with moderate dementia is 10% longer. Or it delays the onset by 1 year or by 2 years. So starting with the slow progression, one of the immediate issues we faced, we found actually a bit of controversy among experts about this, is would it impact on life expectancy? I must say that assumption was probably yes, because if it didn't, then actually mortality rates would have to rise during the period of the rather curtailed period of severe dementia. But in some of our scenarios, we end up with a negative period, which didn't make a lot of sense. So, if looking at the second column, this one, we've got slow progression, no mortality change, so you get a slight saving. More likely, you'd expect that there would be increased survival. In that case, you've added about a third of a quality to people's lives at a lifetime cost of about 10,000. So actually, I should have said earlier that one of our findings was that we estimate the lifetime costs at £125,000 from onset to death over an assumed 4.5-year period. That 4.5-year period would correspond to about 3.5 qualities, drawing on a variety of past studies. So if we had increased survival in this scenario, you'd add about a third of a quality at £10,000 lifetime cost, including the unpaid care. However, if you did that, maybe in this extended earlier period, people's average unit cost would be lower because you've somehow extended, presumably, the very mild within the mild. So maybe you could recoup some of those costs. Then on the two right-hand columns are the two other variants that we were asked to look at, a one-year postponement of the onset and a three-year postponement of the onset. The cost for the extreme right-hand panel is a saving of almost £5 billion, so very, very substantial. A great reduction, of course, in the prevalence of dementia because fewer people are surviving long enough to hit the onset point, because everyone knows that dementia onset is typically in really late old age. So if you can delay the onset, some people never with dementia would otherwise do so, and some of those who reach the severe state never do so. So we found that if only we could find such a medication, its effects relative to the effects of the treatments would indeed potentially be very great. So highest cost, highest quality gain. But what we haven't done, and you'll remember maybe Martin's slide from yesterday, what isn't included here is the cost of the treatment. Of course, the drug doesn't exist. We've no idea how much it might cost and how much the pharmaceutical companies might then charge for it. If it was £10,000 per patient per year, it doesn't make a huge difference to our findings. If it was 10,000, of course, it starts to make a vast difference. So that is a key caveat, and a lot would depend then on the cost that the NHS had to pay for this hypothetical treatment. So I won't go into this in detail, and Martin spoke partly about these yesterday, except to draw attention to our key conclusion in the final bullet point here. We feel that this has shown a strong case for a two-pronged policy. In practice, it would be remarkable if this target of finding such a procedure by 2025 could be achieved, given the huge timescales for producing new chemical entities and testing them and getting them onto the market. Therefore, we feel a great emphasis needs to be put, as discussed earlier, on care and treatment using the best evidence available today for people with dementia today and tomorrow. But given the long-run potential, if only one could find this new pharmaceutical treatment, there seems to be a strong case for putting resources into attempting to do so. And finally, there are lots of methodological issues that this study produced, as you can guess. Some of them we've tried to follow up a little bit in this work, the Alzheimer's Society to be published next week, but most of them remain for us to try and grapple with in the MoDEM study. They include the issue about the valuation to be put on unpaid care that Courtney discussed earlier, and in our new study we've looked at lots of different variants on that, and it makes, of course, a very big difference. We didn't attempt at all to put a value in the study I've been discussing on the lost qualities. We didn't put a money value on it or even in the end assess them in detail. That's something we're planning to look, have started to look at and planning to look at further. And another thing we were not able to do in this time that's my final point, is to look at the outcomes for the carers of people with dementia, which may be crucial, and one of the trials, in particular START trials, specially concentrated on support for carers and outcomes for carers. And we're hoping to look at the outcomes for the user and the carer in the MODEM study. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Open the floor for questions then.
Thank you very much for the very interesting and amazing presentation. When I see how you can get all these data, if you would like to do so in France, it would be much more difficult to access this database as you present it. I have just some technical questions. For the when you compare the unpaired care, you know, this slide is a different cost. How did you estimate this unpaid care?
The trials, or some of them, most of them, I think, and I'm sort of looking at Amrit Pala, who's working with us on it, the third row, collected data on the hours of care that people reported, or on the proportion of their time that they said they couldn't leave the person, had to be present. And where they reported the portion of time, we sort of converted that to using a formula to hours. So in every case, almost every case, we had hours. And we then put valuations on those hours. And as I indicated, the one we decided to use for this purpose was the national minimum wage, which now I think is about £6.20 per hour. But we've also explored all sorts of others, including replacement costs or different costs for carers of different age and so on in our later work.
Rafael, do you want me to add what we're doing next? So in the results that will be presented next week that we can't share with you today, but I can share the method. What we did was to try and refine that a bit more, because we actually have quite a lot of information from the trials, and we have Amrit Pal who can calculate things really well and efficiently very quickly. So we were able to test quite a lot of, look at the literature, look at different methods, and what we thought was that for the case of dementia, it's very important to consider that there's a huge amount of hours provided because of the supervision element, so you can't really leave the person alone, particularly at the moderate to severe stages if they live at home. And so the carer quite often will be with them the 24 hours, of course they'll sleep, some of them. But although they're not actively caring all the time, they feel they have to be there, they think they have to be there. So they're not free to do something else, which is why we're interested in this leisure evaluation. So what we did was to, using some Swedish studies by WIMO, we looked at the percentage of time people reported to be spending in ADL tasks, and then the percentage of time in the more domestic tasks, the percentage of time on supervision. And for the study we'll present next week, which I will be happy to send a report, by the way, if anybody wants to give me their email, we then attributed to the costs of the time spent on ADL, the equivalent hours, so we used percentages, we applied replacement cost approach, and then for the rest of hours in domestic tasks and supervision, we applied the opportunity cost approach. So we went a bit hybrid in our methods. I mean, it's all very speculative. We've actually run it using the pure approach for replacement opportunity and lots of different types of different wage information using individual level data we had. So we've explored that in quite a bit of detail. Okay. And we will be exploring it for the next 3 years too. Mm-hmm. So any ideas are welcome.
Any other questions? Please go ahead.
I just wondered
if you could identify yourself.
I'm Arantha, coming from Sanaxi. I just wondered what was your assumptions about the cost ranges from £1,000 to £10,000. What do your assumptions mean?
Assumptions.
Assumptions about the cost range.
Of the grey area. Pure assumptions. I mean, who knows? I mean, who knows whether it will be discovered, when it will be discovered, what it will be, how much it will cost, and how much the pharmaceutical industry is able to charge the NHS for. So it's just, I don't think we had any special reasons.
We didn't find much guidance.
If I'm allowed to question. And so looking at the result, what was sort of the reaction from the G7 countries since it was sort of presented as the legacy event in England?
I mean, I don't know actually what the sort of policy reaction is because, I mean, at the time Martin presented this at the event, there was a lot of, sort of informally, a lot of interest expressed and positive feedback sort of on the methods that we've done and so on, you know, as a methodological piece of work. What the policy responses from other countries, particularly on that event, I actually don't know. And maybe that will become clearer at the next month, the one in Japan later in the year.
Perhaps.
Although I never realize the topics are a bit different.
I don't know.
And if I quickly add, I think this surprised some people. They expected that the treatment would be automatically cost-saving. Well, if people are able to live longer, they have a longer amount of time to A, be able to develop dementia and B, live with it. So it's an important consideration that these disease modification drugs may not necessarily be cost-saving. And I think that's something that surprised some of the people who commissioned the work originally. And then I think we have noticed an increased interest in prevention. Maybe there seems to be, but that's a bit speculative on my part.
So you will assess this prevention in your project, in modern?
Yes, so we are working with...
Here is just cause of treatment.
We are working with Carol Jagger from Newcastle, who is developing an epidemiological model where she can look at the causes of the underlying causes of disease, including hypertension and their impact on pathologic dementia.
Thank you very much. And,